Chapter 17. Symmetry. In this chapter, what physicists mean by beauty, the concept of symmetry, what string theory says about symmetry. Is symmetry all it's cracked up to be? As motley as the universe is, order and regularity, in a word, symmetry, underlie it all. The concept of symmetry is central to current theories of physics. String theory both giveth and taketh. It's the most symmetrical theory ever devised, yet it suggests that symmetries physicists now regard as fundamental actually aren't. Beauty is deep. When physicists wax eloquent about a theory, their favorite adjective is beautiful. So the theory doesn't just explain the world, it does so with style. The pursuit of beauty is as essential to physics as it is to art, poetry, and speed dating. What physicists mean by beauty closely matches what poet Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote. We ascribe beauty to that which is simple, which has no superfluous parts, which exactly answers its end, which stands related to all things, which is the mean of many extremes. A beautiful theory explains so much with so little, it clicks together without having to be forced. Beauty obviously means different things to different people, and discussions of it can start to sound like nauseatingly sentimental 70s love songs. From Dadaism to punk, entire artistic movements have adopted the creed that prettiness comes at the expense of authenticity. In science, skeptics worry that beauty just means comfort level. But no one doing physics can be totally immune to the charms of beautiful things. In the early stages of developing a theory, before physicists have tested it experimentally, and that applies to all the candidate quantum theories of gravity, mathematical aesthetics is all they have to go on. Beauty may be an imperfect guide, but its success rate softens even the hardest heart. The quality that physicists most often associate with beauty is symmetry. It's easiest to think of symmetry in terms of geometric figures, but the concept extends to more abstract concepts. A symmetrical shape remains the same even if transformed, reflected, rotated, or rescaled. A symmetrical equation remains the same even if transformed, for instance, by altering the mathematical variables. An example is the equation for a simple parabola, y equals x squared. If you replace x by negative x, the equation doesn't change, which is an abstract way of saying that the left side of a parabola is the mirror image of the right. Symmetry has several related qualities. Simple. It's easier to describe a parabola than a random amorphous blob. Unified. Symmetry melds parts into a whole. It relates your left hand to your right, the sides of a hexagon to one another, and the notes in a musical chord to one another. Self-explanatory. A symmetrical body has an inevitability about it. Among the full continuum of possible shapes, only a privileged few are symmetrical. None of their parts could be dropped or changed without breaking the symmetry. Objective. A symmetrical object stays the same even if we view it from different angles. It's independent of us. Symmetry plays the same role in physics as a national constitution plays in politics. It is not a law in itself, but a set of standards for laws, requiring that laws be the same for everyone despite the vagaries of circumstance. Equations must have built-in mechanisms to correct for our individual points of view and our arbitrary conventions. Often, symmetry restricts the equations so much that it determines them almost completely, suggesting that there are only a few ways, maybe just one way, for the world to be put together consistently. Albert Einstein elevated symmetry to this role because his special theory of relativity embodies a symmetry of motion. The laws of physics shouldn't depend on how fast a person is going. For the laws to satisfy this requirement, they must treat space and time in a unified way. The distinction between space and time, and even between electric fields and magnetic fields, is like the distinction between left and right, a question of perspective, specifically your velocity. As powerful as symmetry is, we don't want too much of a good thing. In physics, as in art, the greatest beauty combines harmony with dissonance, structure with surprise. A perfectly symmetrical world would be a sterile one. In the parable of Buridan's ass, a donkey has two bales of hay, one on the left, one on the right. The poor thing can't decide which to eat. Either it breaks the symmetry, or it does nothing and starves. A similar dilemma plays itself out every day on city sidewalks as pedestrians walk toward each other. They have to break left or right. Two people locked in the perfect symmetry of listening to their iPods are going to make asses of themselves. So it goes for nature. The symmetry of the laws of physics reflects the equivalence of various possible situations, but we experience only one of those situations. What makes the choice is one of the central questions in modern physics. Types of symmetries. Symmetry isn't just a pleasing egalitarian ideology. It has tangible consequences. One is the fact we can't create or destroy energy. The conservation of energy has to do with the symmetry of time, or, if you like, the symmetry of procrastination. If we put off something to tomorrow, all else being equal, the outcome will be the same. If two particles smash together in a certain way today, they'll smash the same way tomorrow. Their combined energy couldn't change in the meantime without spoiling this equivalence. Sadly, the all else being equal part is easier to achieve for particles than for humans. Another symmetry lets birds perch safely on bare, high-voltage power lines. Only if birds straddled the wires and the ground, creating a difference of thousands of volts across their little bodies, would they fry. The absolute value of the voltage doesn't matter. Only voltage differences do. In the equations of electromagnetism, we could add 100,000 volts to every voltage, and nothing would change. Because of this, the energy required to create a particle can't depend on the absolute voltage. That has an interesting implication. Suppose we could create an electron at 100,000 volts, let it drop to 0 volts, and then destroy it. The creation and destruction would be a wash, but the fall in voltage would release energy. The net effect would be to create energy, and that's never seen. So we can't, in fact, create an electron on its own. We always need to counterbalance it with a positively charged particle, keeping the net charge fixed. Just as the symmetry of time implies the conservation of energy, the symmetry of voltages implies the conservation of electric charge. These two cases are the archetypes of the two types of symmetries. Space-time symmetry concerns external properties of particles such as their position, velocity, and orientation. Internal symmetry concerns internal properties of particles such as their electric charge or quark color. Each of these two types in turn comes in two varieties. Global symmetry acts equally everywhere. For instance, you add 100,000 volts to all points in space and the laws still apply. Local symmetry can vary with location or time. For instance, you can add a different voltage to every point and the laws still apply. Physicists also call a local symmetry a gauge symmetry. The term is a historical leftover and has nothing to do with oil gauges or 12-gauge shotguns. Confusingly, gauge is sometimes taken to mean an internal symmetry. For clarity, I avoid the term. Global symmetry describes nature, and local symmetry describes our description of nature. Suppose I have a beach ball. It looks the same from every angle. That's the global symmetry. If you and I paint regular latitude and longitude lines on the ball, we can see its symmetry simply by rotating it until our views match. But why should what we see depend on how we draw the lines? If you paint drunkenly meandering lines and I paint nice regular ones, then to see that they're really equivalent, we can distort those lines by stretching and squeezing the surface of the ball, putting the plastic in tension. Each conceivable set of curvy lines corresponds to a certain amount of tension, and all are equally valid. That's the local symmetry, which can apply even when there's no global symmetry. Ensuring local symmetry requires the laws of physics to be dynamic. A few subtleties aside, Einstein's theories exemplify the global versus local distinction. Special relativity is based on global symmetry. If I'm sitting on a smoothly moving train and you're watching from the station platform, we can reconcile our perspectives with a straightforward offset and speed. It's just like rotating the ball by a certain angle to see that our grids line up. General relativity is the local counterpart to this symmetry. If my train accelerates, we need to use different offsets at different moments in time. The analog to the tension in the plastic of the beach ball is the artificial gravity pushing me back in my seat. According to Einstein's principle of equivalence, acceleration and gravity are two ways to describe the same situation. For the laws of motion to be the same for both of us, they must allow for the possibility of gravity. In the case of electromagnetism, the global symmetry gives you conservation of electric charge, and the local symmetry gives you the entire machinery of electromagnetic forces, photons and all. Those forces compensate for the fact that what you call 0 volts, I could call 100,000 volts. A third person could call -5 volts, and we'd be equally right. All that really matters is the voltage difference at the point of contact, where the electromagnetic forces ensure that our conventions are consistent. Quantum leap. Because of local symmetry, if you want to supply 120 volts, you must provide a voltage reference against which to define it. That's the reason electricity requires two wires. The explanation we were all taught in elementary school of completing a circuit isn't quite right. Electrons don't flow around an AC circuit. They just oscillate back and forth, and they only need one wire for that. Besides defining 0 volts, the second wire prevents the electric charge on an appliance from varying as electrons oscillate in and out. The standard model is based on local internal symmetries. The symmetries that account for the nuclear forces are similar to the one for electromagnetism, but somewhat more involved. What complicates them is that there's just one type of electric charge, but two types of weak nuclear charge and 3 quark colors. Those 3 quark colors, like ordinary colors, can mix. Physicists pick 3 as primary and call them red, green, and blue. But who's to say that what you perceive as red, I also perceive as red? The local symmetry of the standard model ensures that what you call a red quark, I could call mauve, and we'd be equally right. All that matters is the color contrast at the point where particles meet. A tangible result of the nuclear symmetries is that they relate seemingly dissimilar particles and allow them to convert from one type to another. Quarks can don new colors. Particles with different weak charges, such as the electron and neutrino, can morph into each other by an operation akin to rotation. Symmetries of nature. Name. Time translation. Type, space-time. What's equivalent? Moments of time. What it implies? Energy is conserved. Name, space translation. Type, space-time. What's equivalent? Positions in space. What it implies? Momentum is conserved. Name, rotation. Type, space-time. What's equivalent? Orientations in space. What it implies, angular momentum is conserved. Name, scale invariance. Type, space-time. What's equivalent, objects of different sizes. What it implies, forces hardly vary in strength with scale. Name, special relativity. Type, space-time. What's equivalent, states of constant motion. What it implies, space and time are united. Name, general relativity. Type, space-time. What's equivalent? All states of motion. What it implies? Gravity is space-time warping. Name, charge reversal conjugation. Type, space-time. What's equivalent? Particles and antiparticles. What it implies. Antimatter exists. Name. Mirror, parity. Type, space-time. What's equivalent? Left and right. What it implies. Particles come in left and right-handed varieties. Name. Time reversal. Type, space-time. What's equivalent? Moving forward and backward in time. What it implies. Laws don't care which way time flows. Name. Electromagnetic gauge symmetry. Type, internal. What's equivalent? Calibration of zero voltage. What it implies. Electric charge is conserved, global. Electromagnetic waves transmit forces, local. Name. Quark color symmetry. Type, internal. What's equivalent? Choices of primary quark colors. What it implies. Color is conserved, global. Strong force binds quarks, local. Name. Particle exchange. Type. Bridges space-time and internal. What's equivalent? Identical particles when swapped. What it implies. Particles of matter resist packing. Name. Supersymmetry hypothesized. Type. Bridges space-time and internal. What's equivalent? Particles of matter and particles of force. What it implies. Every particle has a partner. Name. T-duality hypothesized. Type. Space-time. What's equivalent? Small and large distances. What it implies. Space-time is emergent. Equally important, though, is how the Standard Model isn't symmetrical. The weak nuclear force is notoriously lopsided. If it were fully symmetrical, the weak force and electromagnetism would be two sides of a coin, the so-called electroweak forces, rather than such distinct phenomena. Physicists think that deep down the weak force is a model of harmony. Early in cosmic history, its true symmetrical self was present for all to see. It was glorious. It was magnificent. It was barren. Like one of Le Corbusier's ideally proportioned and utterly lifeless concrete plazas. For instance, because particles in the electroweak symmetric universe lacked masses, they traveled at the speed of light and couldn't settle down into compact atoms. For the universe to become fit for complex structures, the symmetry had to break. It happened when one of the elements of the Standard Model, the Higgs field, froze out and filled space. The electroweak forces split, and the weak force became unable to propagate freely. Many of the contingent features of our universe date to this event. It was as if a fog settled on the concrete plaza, hid its harshness, and made it seem quirkily charming. Who's the most symmetrical of them all? The symmetries of the Standard Model relate particles within classes. Red quarks to blue and green ones, electrons to neutrinos, and so on. The putative grand unified theories break down these class barriers and relate all the particles of matter, quarks, electrons, neutrinos, to one another. But that leaves one great imbalance in nature. What, if anything, relates particles of matter to particles of force? The answer, inspired by string theory, is supersymmetry. It performs a grand dynastic marriage of the particle families, stating that every fermion, the category that encompasses particles of matter, pairs off with a boson, the category that encompasses particles of force, and vice versa. All the particles of the Standard Model have a partner particle, or sparticle, waiting to be found. In anticipation, researchers have come up with a veritable pig Latin for naming them. Quarks hook up with a new breed of particle known as squarks, leptons with sleptons, ups with sups, tops with stops, and so on. For bosons, the partner names end with eno. Photons get together with photinos, W bosons with winos, and so on. Apart from enlarging the family of particles, supersymmetry enlarges the scope for making puns, as if P-brains and G-strings weren't enough. Definition. Supersymmetry is the symmetry relating fermions, including particles of matter, and bosons, including particles of force, to each other. A sparticle is a supersymmetric partner of an ordinary particle. What makes supersymmetry so super is that it forges a link not just between the particle categories, but also between space-time symmetries and internal symmetries. Using an abstract version of rotation, you can transform particles into sparticles and then back again. In the process, the particles scoot over a little bit in space. A change in an internal property affects an external one. Before they discovered supersymmetry, physicists had reckoned such a feat impossible. Like other symmetries, supersymmetry comes in both a global and a local version. If every local symmetry has an associated force, what is supersymmetry's force? The fact supersymmetry causes a particle to scoot over suggests the answer. Motion is described by special relativity, and the locally symmetric version of special relativity is general relativity. It stands to reason that local supersymmetry is related to general relativity and, therefore, to gravity. This is one of the most dramatic examples of how uniting the elements of quantum theory may rope in gravity as well. In the 1970s, physicists sought to develop local supersymmetry into a quantum theory of gravity known as supergravity. Unfortunately, it scooted straight into a brick wall. For one thing, it suffered, like so many other efforts to quantize gravity, from the paradox of the graviton. The particle that transmits gravity would spiral out of control. Embedding supersymmetry in string theory solved this problem. Definition: supergravity is the theory of gravity based on supersymmetry. Super well hidden. Supersymmetry is beautiful, pure, and ultimately as sterile as other symmetries. It must be broken, because if it weren't broken, every particle and its sparticle would have the same mass. Physicists would have seen them all by now, and supersymmetry would be an established fact rather than just a good idea. Seeking sparticles is one of the main goals of the Large Hadron Collider. In order to have eluded detection, sparticles must be heavier than ordinary particles, and therefore beyond the capacity of older accelerators to create. In addition, they must not be totally free to decay into ordinary particles, or we'd have seen them in naturally occurring particle processes. The least massive sparticle, like the least massive ordinary particles, electron, up quark, must be stable. Like the electroweak symmetry, supersymmetry had to break sometime early in cosmic history. How it happened, physicists aren't sure. They suspect it happened not long before the electroweak symmetry broke. In fact, the one may have triggered the other. For our own good, supersymmetry had to break in the right way. If, for example, selectrons had turned out to be lighter than electrons, atoms would consist of selectrons rather than electrons. Whereas electrons are standoffish and resist being shoved together, selectrons have no such compunction. They'd all pack into the same orbit close to the atomic nucleus, rather than space themselves out in orbits of different sizes. Two atoms, rather than repelling, would meld. Physicist Robert Kahn of Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, who has pondered this and other what-if cases in physics, compares the outcome to Ice 9 in Kurt Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle, only worse. Pros and cons. Even in its impure form, supersymmetry clears out many of the nettles of modern physics. It explains why matter exists. Whereas particles of force emerge organically from the requirements of local symmetry, particles of matter don't. In standard quantum theory, they have to be assumed from the outset. According to supersymmetry, the existence of force particles implies the existence of matter particles, since they can be transformed into each other. It solves the Higgs hierarchy problem. As mentioned in Chapter 7, the Higgs field is a narcissist and interacts with itself intensely, emitting particles and then reabsorbing them in a juggling act that gets totally out of hand. The energy of its self-interaction acts as mass, elevating it far above its apparent value. Supersymmetry doesn't presume to deny the Higgs its pleasures, but evens them out. For each particle the Higgs emits, it also gives off a sparticle whose effect negates that of the particle. It ameliorates the cosmological constant problem. For similar reasons, supersymmetry brings some balance to the fluctuations that fill otherwise empty space with energy. It doesn't zero out the energy, but does greatly reduce it, which is progress. It causes the forces to converge in strength. As mentioned in Chapter 6, particles are surrounded by entourages of virtual particles, which cause the forces of nature to vary in strength as physicists apply more energy. Eventually, the forces become nearly equal in strength, a sign that they are related. If virtual sparticles join in, they fine-tune the rate of variation. Electromagnetism strengthens with energy faster, the strong force weakens with energy slower, and the weak force shifts from weakening to strengthening. The end result is that the forces don't just become nearly equal in strength, but almost exactly equal. It stabilizes the proton. Grand unified theories used to predict that the proton should decay at a slow but discernible rate. By pushing up the energy at which the forces converge, supersymmetry can slow its decay, which would explain why physicists have yet to see a proton fall apart. It may explain the dearth of antimatter. The near-total lack of antimatter in our universe has long been a mystery, since matter and antimatter behave so similarly. For particle reactions in the early universe to have favored matter to such a degree, they must have been thrown badly off kilter. Supersymmetry could have done that. It may explain the universe's dark matter. Known particles can't account for the dark matter that fills our universe. Sparticles can. Processes early in the Big Bang would have created them as surely as they created ordinary particles. The lightest, being stable, would linger to this day in amounts that match astronomers' observations. Physicists think this sparticle is the so-called neutralino, a cocktail of the photino, Higgsino, and Zeno. As its name suggests, the neutralino is electrically neutral, so it doesn't interact with photons. It would indeed be dark. Definition. The neutralino is thought to be the lightest possible supersymmetric particle. That said, supersymmetry raises some questions that physicists have yet to solve. Sparticles haven't been observed. The process that broke the symmetry remains a mystery, and novel supersymmetric phenomena haven't been seen. It's possible that supersymmetry broke at such a high energy that it doesn't bear on the problem of the Higgs or the cosmological constant, in which case its charms are more theoretical than practical. A higher point of view. Besides introducing physicists to supersymmetry and other new symmetries, string theory has encouraged physicists to rethink the concept of symmetry. For instance, strings blur the categories of space-time symmetry and internal symmetry. If space has extra dimensions we can't see, then many of the internal symmetries of particles could actually be space-time symmetries. They look internal only because the extra-dimensional space is hidden from us. The seemingly abstract rotations of the internal symmetries could be real rotations, but in higher dimensions. In fact, that's why string theory predicts space has a total of 10 dimensions. If it had more, there'd be too much symmetry. No laws of physics could satisfy its strictures. In addition, string theory shows that many symmetries aren't as essential as physicists once thought. Physicists long suspected that the specific symmetries of the Standard Model weren't truly fundamental, but instead were aspects of the more encompassing symmetry of a grand unified theory. Nonetheless, they thought the concept of local internal symmetry would endure. String theory calls that into question. The concept of duality introduced in Chapter 16 is a symmetry of symmetries. If symmetry suggests that a seemingly fixed aspect of the world can be an artifact of our point of view, then duality suggests that symmetry itself can be an artifact of our point of view. Different theories of the world involving different symmetries can be completely equivalent. If swapping one symmetry for another has no real effect, then the symmetry can't be fundamental. It must be more of a tool than an objective fact. In a sense, that's what physicists approaching quantum gravity from the metaphor of fluids and solids have been arguing all along. In the loop. Gauge symmetries might not be fundamental. They might only appear as long-distance artifacts of our description of the theory. If so, perhaps some of the gauge symmetries of the Standard Model or even general relativity are similarly long-distance artifacts. Nathan Seeberg, Institute for Advanced Study. If the symmetries physicists have been working with aren't fundamental at all, what is? No one yet knows. In the meantime, string theorists happily use duality to switch between symmetries and explore their theory from different angles. So the pursuit of beauty may be taking physicists beyond conventional notions of it. The least you need to know. Modern theories of physics are built on the idea of symmetry, and string theory pushes this idea to its logical conclusion. The concept of supersymmetry, which was inspired by string theory, unifies particles of matter and of force. Supersymmetry ties up a huge number of loose ends in physics, possibly cosmic dark matter. String theory implies that many of the symmetries assumed in relativity theory and the Standard Model of particles may not be truly fundamental.